This is a Willets Point Shea Stadium bound 7 express train. The next and last stop is Willets Point Shea Stadium.
Yes, it is the Subway to Shea podcast. Anthony Rivera here with you talking about all the news and happenings surrounding that team from Queens, the New York Mets. Episode 137 from the revamped Subway to Shea studios in my office. Huge thank you to WFAN's Lori Rubinson, who joined me last week to preview the season. Check her out on WFAN every Sunday night from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And you can follow her on X at L Rubinson. Now, on to this week's episode. And I did not even fathom the Mets starting off the season this way, starting off 1-5. I did not see it coming. I know it's early, and as my guest today usually says, we are in the getting to know you phase of this part of the season. Mike Silva, host of the Talkin' Mets podcast, joins me now on the Subway to Shea podcast. Catch his podcast wherever you listen to your podcast. Man, I'm saying podcast a lot. Follow him on X at Talking Mets No G. I'm glad you changed that, because sometimes it was hard to follow you as Mike Silva me.
I had to.
So I'm glad you changed that up. So now I just have to put Talking Mets No G.
Everything is Talking Mets No G. Instagram, Substack for the newsletter, X. I'm getting used to saying X instead of Twitter. The weirdest branding, Elon Musk, I got to tell you, you've made it very, very difficult for me to figure out how to support the only, you know, the app that's helped build my humble following. But thanks for having me. Wild week of weather, wild week of baseball, and it's never a dull moment, which makes this kind of format pretty freaking easy for you and I, but I wish it wasn't, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, definitely a lot more to talk about, and I had like two different titles ready to go for this episode. Dark cloud over Citi Field, storms over Citi Field. It's apropos, kind of.
That's right.
You know, how are you hanging in there with everything that has gone on this past week? I know X can be, and social media has been pretty rough this week. You're talking about a team that is 1-5. And the last time we saw this kind of thing happen was 2005, right? The Mets started off 1-5, you know, with the Beltran and the Pedro Martinez. I still remember that first game in Cincinnati. Everything was perfect.
I remember
home run. I think Beltran hit a home run. Pedro was dealing through 8 innings, and then Braden Looper blows it. They lose 5 in a row. Pedro comes back on the Sunday against Smoltz, and they both had a nice matchup against each other. Mets eventually winning. This is something different, and I say that because the Mets were home this week. You know, this is the home stand to start off the season, and they started off 0-5. They win the second game of the doubleheader thanks to Pete Alonso, who hit a game-tying home run in the ninth, and then Tyrone Taylor, who had the game-winning RBI in the same inning. How you doing, Mike, with the way this has started?
I mean, look, this is not the way you wanted to start any kind of season. And I've kind of started a little controversy because I've called out the fans, and I think there's a big misunderstanding about what I mean. First of all, and I had somebody send me a pretty, you know, straight, hey, look, I'm not following you anymore because you attacked the fans. And I guess on X, when you have whatever it is, 250 characters now, it comes across pretty black and white.
It's like texting, right? Like, you never get the message across the way you're trying to explain it.
I never have said the fans don't have a right to boo. I've never said the fans don't have a right to feel frustrated or to feel depressed, especially when you see the Yankees winning. What I don't understand, and I think Citi Field all off the bat is a tough place to play for the home team offensively. The ball doesn't carry, especially in April, especially when it's cold. It was 49 degrees, at least my car said that today. I'm sure it was a lot colder in the shade, and it's not a comfortable place from that standpoint. And the fans historically, because since Citi Field opened is post 06, 07, 08, have always had that negative overall pull. I think it's gotten worse in the last 5 years, maybe. And I've talked to people and I have not gone to the ballpark. I was supposed to go to the ballpark last night and then it didn't work out, obviously, because of the weather. And they're basically saying that there's a lot of anger in the stands, fans giving up, hating on players, scapegoating. And I'm saying, you know, the game is more complicated than that. You know, it's easy to scapegoat Francisco Lindor and say, okay, he's the problem. And yelling and booing and going on X and venting, which has kind of become like a therapy session, but it's not helping because these guys read that stuff. Other free agents read this stuff. And, you know, I don't want to make this whole about Trey Turner in Philadelphia. And even with Alec Baum, they did the same thing after, you know, he cursed. I remember there was against the Mets a couple of years ago. He made 3 errors in a game and he says, get me the blank out of here. And the fans actually turned around and kind of supported him. And you don't expect that out of Philadelphia fans. So I see a Mets fan base that is very much, and Anthony, maybe you're a little younger than me, like the Rangers. Like Zach Scott said, he was even surprised. It's worse than pre-04 Red Sox. And I went to Boston and did a tour at Fenway Park in 2000. And I remember they had, it was a beautiful tour. You get down on the field and they had it down where they did numerology with the retired numbers to show you why there's a curse. That's psychotic. That's crazy. And they had it. I wish I could remember, but when you did the retired numbers, it came out to like 1986 or something, like really weird, weird, weird. You could Google it and find it out. And I see a lot of those things, the Rangers hockey, the Red Sox, the Cubs fans, all merging together into this like super negative, passionate, crazy fan. And it's going to make it hard to play here. And that's what I'm saying, guys. I'm not saying accept mediocrity. Anyone who listens to me knows I'm all about excellence. But understanding what the sport is about, the length of the season, the nuance to a team, the nuance to winning and losing. If you were 1-5 and this was July, or like last year when the Mets went 7-19 in June, of course you recognize that. But the season's not over because you've built up a cushion of some sorts. It just looks a lot worse coming out of the gate. And a team that was expected to win in the mid-80s, be in the muck, like I call it. Did you not think you were going to see some of this craziness? Now, here's the good news. Historically, they're not going to average 2 runs a game. They're just not. Like, yeah. That's insane. If they do, if Brandon Nimmo finishes with a negative OPS plus, that's historic in 550 at bats. You and I would. The pitching will not be as good as it's been, but overall, they've been in all these games. And I gotta say, if you're looking at this like an executive would, you're not walking away happy, but you're like, okay, there's something here. And how do we get to that next level, I guess is where it is. So, you know, that's how I'm looking at it. I'm trying to be balanced. As a super fan, I could say this stinks. This team stinks. Lindor stinks. Listen, I got a father who's texting me and driving me crazy about this stuff. And I'm like trying to, and I said to him today, I says, you think Lindor stinks? He got blown away with 101 mile hour fastball. But when Diaz does it, we love it. So is it okay for Diaz to do it to the opposition? But when Lindor strikes out against that Heat, he sucks. I'm like, gotta look at it a little bit more. And he said to me, well, stop giving the opposition credit because he's mad, because he needs somebody to be angry with because you're frustrated. He's a fan. I'm trying to be a little more balanced. And I think the fans got to do a better job, not accept mediocrity. But if you're going to go to that stadium and be miserable, don't go. Do something else. Why do this to yourself? I got a lot of stuff you could do that's not Mets related. Trust me. And that's my long-winded answer. So I already probably went over my time, Anthony.
No, you're good. You're good. It makes a lot of sense. Look, you know, it doesn't help that there's another team in town. It doesn't help at all. If the Mets were the only team in town, I think people's reactions would be a little bit different. And I do like you, we both understand the frustrations, but you know, you're wanting like a lot of these fans, probably all the fans want this team to overcome this adversity. But as a fan, when you're taking that adversity, they're not overcoming it. And they're letting these events, you know, overtake them. For some, yes. For some others, you know, it's a lot different. Every fan, you know, to each his own. And like, you know, we've talked about off air, you know, if some fans just, I feel like could be over the top, I have to put the pause on them, you know, on social media.
Sure.
And take a break. You know what? Once the game's over, once the post press conference is over, I go watch TV. I go watch Friends. I go watch something else. Yeah. You have to clear.
You have to do it.
Yeah. Clear.
And we're doing this for a living. Like, we're not doing it full time for a living, but I treat this thing like as if I was a beat writer. If you guys want to laugh at that or say I do, because I take
and there's money. A lot of work that
and it's a lot of work.
Editing, and I'm blessed. Everything.
Right. And I'm blessed that I have the flexibility, that I feel I'm talented enough where I could put stuff together and do it in a manner that fits within what my life is as a freelance media member. Where I thought the insanity took a level this week and an unhealthy level, this is why I really called the fans out, is when people were mad at Pete Alonso for the whole concert thing, dancing on stage. And I'm saying to myself, all of us have had bad days at work. All of us have done things at work that stink. And if you think that this is any different for them than for you, that doesn't mean they care less. It doesn't mean that they don't love the city and the team. But there is no human being at the level, and I understand they're getting paid stupid money that you and I will never see. But if you don't think at any level it's a job that you need to decompress, and that's his decompression, then you're fooling yourself. There's a lot. I mean, what would you rather him do? Sit at home and smoke weed to decompress? Would you rather him do drugs? Would you rather him drink alcohol? Would you rather him, you know, sit and stare at the ceiling? Would that make you happy? Because he's showing he cares. Of course he cares. No athlete wants to walk into that locker room and hit 150 or be 1 for 25. One thing that someone told me a long time ago, a player said, when you get that big contract and you walk back into that locker room after you get paid, it is hard because now everyone looks at you, well, you got paid. You know, you don't think people talk about money in that locker room and say, look at what he's getting paid. I could do better, because somebody's always there to take your job. And then, of course, there's the media and the fans. So I don't think they got to. I've been blessed where I've had some behind the, not a lot, but some behind the door access to the thought process. And that's where I think I come from a different perspective. And, you know, I think we've taken this to almost like a football. Every Sunday counts. Like, it's not like that in baseball. And
no. And you know what? You look at it like, you know, Pete loves playing baseball. Baseball's supposed to be fun, but it's also his job. Like you said, he's getting paid to do this. And if I'm getting paid to do a job and I have a bad day, I can't sit around and sulk, because that's going to affect me going into the next day. You got to go out. You got to do stuff. And, you know, they talk about the whole thing with Pete Alonso, and then you have, you know, people complaining about the Queens dance crew. You know, those guys are coming in very talented. They're doing a job. They're coming in during breaks in the innings. Like, you know, they have, I don't know if you've been to, I don't know when was the last time you went to a Mets game, but every break there's some trivia or they're doing a giveaway or bet or they have the little kids running and stealing the base and going back.
The this wiffle is happening. Ball.
Yeah, this is ball. Happening during those breaks. What do they do during the other breaks? They go up all the way to the top of the I don't know what you call that.
The Pepsi corner or whatever the Pepsi top of them.
Yeah, whatever the top is. And they're throwing shirts. Do you see people ignoring them and not trying to catch a t-shirt? No, they're gonna take the t-shirt and have fun. You know, it's
the Knicks have the city dancers, right? Knicks, the Lakers had the Laker girls. And do you think when Reggie Miller was going off in the fourth quarter of the 94, now I'm dating myself, the 94 conference finals in game five, you think that the people sitting there wanted to see the Knicks city dancers during timeouts? Of course not. Do I like some of the modern things that brought to baseball? I don't need dancers on the dugout top. Does it matter to me? Look, you have to realize that in order to be a brand, you have to draw casual baseball people who go to the ballpark because they want to have a good time regardless of what the outcome is. And a Mets executive told me many years ago, this is probably 10 years ago, like from a marketing perspective, when they, that's their job, that's the department, they have to treat this where, because the game is not like Pepsi or Coke, when you buy a Coke, you expect quality control, the same product all the time. It tastes the same. And if it doesn't, you got a problem on your hands, because that's going to hurt your brand. Baseball can't do that, because I can't promise you're going to win and be happy. So they do these other things that are more predictable for entertainment. That's their job.
Yeah.
And then I say, well, Steve Cohen doesn't care about the team because of all this other stuff. Steve Cohen's not building a roster. Steve Cohen hired Stearns, who then gets a budget. And then if he wants to go above that budget, he works with Cohen to say, here's why. Cohen's not going, I mean, he's recruiting, but he's not building. And he also has marketing people and business people that are responsible for doing other aspects of the team. That doesn't mean he's not committed to winning. It's just immature, lazy narratives that are easy to fall back on when you're angry. It's like yelling at your spouse.
And you throw all that together. You throw all that together, and like I said, you add the team across town who got the big head honcho in Juan Soto. He's got off to a hot start. The team's got off to a hot start. So now all these things factor in. The Mets didn't go after a big they went after Yamamoto and they didn't get him. But like they didn't do anything besides that to kind of counterbalance. And we're at I think the fans feel like maybe they're in some kind of limbo or you know, some
I think the word reboot. I think if they had to do it over, and Billy Epler, who I thought was not a bad GM, I thought he was just bad with, you know, dressing up his conversations with the media. He was inside baseball. Stearns is a little bit more affable, I would say. Yeah. And I think he knows how to not talk Ivy League and talk to the audience. And I think reboot or rebuild or fire sale or whatever they want to call, once you trade Scherzer and Verlander, it's hard to dress it up anyway. So off the bat, since Carlos Correa's physical failed, there's been the pall over this organization. And he got a little bit of a jolt during spring training. I wrote about it at the newsletter with Diaz coming back and some of the excitement over the kids from the spring breakout game. But other than that, you don't have much excitement on the big league roster until they start winning and showing some life. Now, is today the day? Nice comeback in game two. They got a win. They didn't play well. Let's remember that.
Oh, they were no hit for almost 8 innings.
Yeah, they didn't. And then one hit they got before that with Bader was a bloop. I mean, it wasn't like it was hit 900 miles an hour. So, like, this is the first step. You keep hearing, though, and everyone's going to say, of course, what are they going to say? That the clubhouse doesn't feel the same about this team that everybody else, that they have their own algorithms that have them as an 84-85 win team. Well, go and look at some 85 win teams, pick anyone over the course of history of baseball, and look at their record throughout the season and just see the up ebbs and flows of that. Think about that Oakland team that they wrote Moneyball about. That team started out under 500 about 80 something games of the season. Now they won, what, 20 something in a row? I'm not saying the Mets should do that. Indians did that. Now the Guardians, but they were the Indians at that time back in, what, 2018 or something like that. I'm not saying this is good, but you got to take this one day at a time. And there is some positives to take from this week. There's some negatives, but it's not all bad. I didn't see a team that to me looks like a 100 loss team. Honestly, it doesn't, because I saw a team that has, you know, some challenges, and it's probably going to be playing a lot of close games, which requires execution and luck, which they haven't had. So we'll see. I mean, that to me, the jury's out. It's too soon for me to say that they're going to swing one way or the other, but I don't think it's a bad team. I don't think it's a team that's going to average 5 out of 6 games losing on a consistent basis, at least if they stay relatively healthy, which they are, I think, now.
Look, the losses don't bother me. I'm going to say the losses don't bother me at all. Going 1-5 doesn't bother me as much. What bothers me is I still feel like something is missing on this team. Not a player. Something is missing from this core group. Something is missing from this team entirely. You go back to Correa, like you mentioned before. I'm going back even further. That loss to Atlanta has changed the direction of the mentality of this team. They got punched in the gut against Atlanta. They got the uppercut.
Yep.
In 2022, they got the uppercut from the Padres in the wild card series, and they have not been the same since. Edwin Diaz or not. I mean, the team had David Robertson pitching very well for them last season.
Yeah, it's a shame.
The pitching, you know, fell apart. That, you know, I don't know. Something is just not right to me.
Right.
Mentally with this.
And if you want to go back to the core, and it's funny because I hear people say, well, this core is bad. It's soft. And I said, you know, I heard that about David Wright and Reyes. And at times I heard that about Robin Ventura and Mike Piazza and Edgardo Alfonso. I've heard that before.
Yeah.
Reyes and Wright post 07 collapse were crucified here. Wright especially. And nobody, if he gets his number retired next year, I'm not going to hear any pundit, anybody talk about anything but reverence for David Wright at all. But I was there firsthand. People saying he's not clutch. Everything that you're hearing them say about Lindor and
they're
Alonso.
Saying it about,
and
they said it about Alonso today.
Right.
While the game's going on.
Right.
Saying that he's never been clutch ever.
Well, I see home run walk off against the Cardinals, against the Rays. He's great with that runner on second usually. Lindor, whether you like the stat or not, everyone's judged the same. Fangraphs. He's had a better, on both sides of the ball, balanced performance since he's been in the Mets uniform than Juan Soto, who was with the Nats and the Padres. I'm not saying that he's better than Juan Soto, but he's an overall better player when you take both sides of the ball into play. And he's historically been that. Now, he's not sexy sometimes because maybe he's a little bit streaky. He's not as consistent. And maybe he does it in a different way, but he's been really, really good. You know, not to say that I'm not concerned about some other guys, and maybe we'll see what JD Martinez has. Maybe if McNeil is a utility player, because he's played like a utility player now for a while, that shortens the lineup. If Beatty doesn't hit, and I use Alec Baum as a really good example. If you look at Alec Baum's first year, like, and I know that's a lazy, you know, 90 miles south, third baseman. That is who I think Beatty can evolve into. That's not an, that's not a perennial all-star, mind you. I think that's realistic. I hope he's better, but that's realistic. And I got to tell you, I've seen better things on defense from him and stuff like that. So, you know, you got a bit of a old glove, no bat in center field. Marte's an if. Like, there's things that have to shake out, which have nothing to do with being clutch. It has to do with what version of these guys are you going to get. And if you get the negative, then yeah, you're going to be short on offense and you're going to have more brownouts than you like. And when the pitching comes to earth, you might have some ugly losses. So they got to figure this out. You know, what do they have here? And I think that's what Stearns is going to do. They're not going to make any big changes, I think, until May. And I wouldn't be surprised if they stick with what they got until Memorial Day. I mean, that's about 60 games, right? So
Well, I'm just surprised because, you know, we haven't even seen JD Martinez yet. So I thought that there would be a little more leeway with this roster and with this team. And, you know, a lot of people talk about, a lot of people talk about, you know, the core and it doesn't have to be broken up and maybe they're not the right. I think the best, someone had posted this on Twitter. I don't know. I can't remember who it was, but I think the best representation of what people have said about the core is that they have underperformed. I think that's the best aspect.
So far there. I mean, historically so. I mean, Anthony, go to Baseball Reference. Going today, they scored 8 runs. Yeah, they only played 4 games coming into today. They got guys with negative OPS pluses. That's not real. Lindor's not going to go 1 for 23 over the course of many times in this season.
Yeah, and they came into today with the worst batting average so far of all baseball teams. Worse than the Marlins, who are 0-7. Worse than the Athletics.
Sure.
And that's before this whole 8 innings of no-hit ball.
Which is going, even though they won a game. And look, there's generally, you know, they haven't hit all spring. They didn't hit in spring training. If you want to point to a thing to be angry about, maybe the preparation for the season for the hitters wasn't, because they were so focused on maintenance and load management. I'll use an NBA term. Nimmo particularly, McNeil got hurt, so there was nothing they could do there. I don't have Alonso and Lindor's at bats in the spring, but I don't think they did more than a couple of games. I don't remember them playing many complete games in the spring.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't know if that matters to these guys. I mean, because like they said in 2022, they had 2 weeks of spring training and that was it. But that's different. You're really like, go, go, go. You don't like ramp up and then it's plateau. And then like it's when you have a normal spring, that's not WBC or lockout strike related. You have to manage the sleepiness of it. And they look like they're in spring training mode in the offense.
I said the same thing,
which to me, that's a preparation thing. And that's on the manager and that's on the front office. And I don't know if that's the case, but that's something to talk about. And I'm sure they are too. They're not sitting around, you know, scratching their heads, looking at, you know, Fangraphs. They got so much more access to data and analytics that we don't. They'll figure it out. And, you know, I think getting away from home is going to help them. I think the weather stunk. It was one of the worst baseball weather starts I've seen in a while. The atmosphere is negative. I heard opening day wasn't bad, but everyone said after that it was bad. And maybe it'd be good for them. Go to Cincinnati. Go to Atlanta. Throw yourself in the... Listen, go big here. There's no hiding. There's no soft part of the schedule. Just go out and do it. Get away. Maybe you sneak in Atlanta, take 3 out of 4 early in the year. That's 4 less times you got to go there. You know what I'm thinking about? Like, it's not the middle of July where they're focused and amped up. They might be coming in, that's, you know, they might be like doing their own version of sleepiness or whatever, but, you know, we'll see.
I think that, you know, a lot of people talk about, you know, spring training and not putting too much into what happens during there, but you know, results do matter. You want to see these guys pitch well and get off to the starts they needed to ramp up. And a lot of the emphasis we saw was on how well the pitching was, how well the bullpen was. But side note, they weren't hitting very well in spring training at all. They weren't scoring runs, nothing. And it has now carried over into the season. And that Lindor comment where he mentioned they had to find their footing, that was supposed to be during the springtime. You find your footing then.
Yeah, that to me is the prep. That's the question. The only thing I could think of, it's a preparation problem. You know, the other team has to hit in this weather too. But the other team didn't hit a hell of a lot. Now, you also got to say, well, you just said, Mike, that the pitching was good. Well, we have to see. Now they go to a bandbox and they play against, you know, slow pitch softball, the Braves. Now you'll really see, is Manaea as good as he said? long fly by. I mean, there was a number of outs that could have been, you know, inchier hits throughout the week. I mean, that's just baseball. You hit a hard ball hard right at somebody. You know, we'll see. I think going on the road is something that I would embrace if I were them. You don't have to worry about anybody being, they're going to be negative or not agnostic to you. They're going to hate you because you're the visitor. Go out there and play and start hitting. And then if they play well on the road and they come back, then it's like, okay, what's going on? Why is the home court such a problem here? It's kind of like with the Knicks when the opposition gets up for being at Madison Square Garden. They don't do the same when they go to Brooklyn or when they go to Oklahoma City. You know, there's this tangible reason to say, hey, okay, here's why it's harder to do this. And is it because of the fans or the atmosphere or the ballpark? I don't know. We'll see. I'm just speculating on all this.
Once again, I'm here with Mike Silva, the host of the Talkin' Mets podcast. That's Talkin' with no G. Mike, you know, the pitching, the starting pitching and the bullpen to a certain extent has been pretty solid. I think they have one of the better ERAs out there right now.
Yep.
Outside of the Luis Severino start, outside of Quintana, who I don't know, people were kind of upset with his start on opening day, but that's who he is. The starting pitcher he is. Yeah. We got a good start from Sean Manaea, who I think it was 5 2/3 of no hit ball from him, right, even in that loss.
Yep.
Adrian Hauser pitched well. They took him out a little earlier than I thought they were. I thought they were going to let him battle through that. They didn't in game one of the doubleheader. And then you got Jose Buto, who got to pitch game two.
Showed some moxie. Yep.
He started off rough and he was able to battle because, you know, they were talking about in between games, Jose Buto is really going to have to, you know, deal out because, you know, the Mets went through seven pitchers and, yep, you know, they took out Adrian Hauser's 67 pitches he threw. I thought they were going to keep him a little longer and let him fight through it. They didn't. Yep. They took him. They gave him the hook. And
that's an analytics move. Yeah. So my guess with Hauser is the analytics says they have to twice around the order take him out. That's probably what they say. You know, Buto could have been undone early on. He battled. I don't think the Tigers have a great offense. I think they got some good arms coming out of that pen and in the rotation. I mean, the Tigers are a team that some have thought could win the Central. So this is not just the 100 lost Tigers here at that point. The Mets have a rotation I called the Jeff Supan rotation. Jeff Supan beat the Mets in game seven with the Cardinals. He was a career league average, slightly below league average guy. And I think what you can expect on a consistent basis, and I think this is where Stearns was going, is 5-6 innings of 2-3 runs, which on most days, and hand it over to the bullpen, on most days in the sixth inning, if a starter gives up 2-3 runs, you should either be ahead, maybe behind a run, but you're not getting blown out. You're in the game at that point. The problem I have with the six inning, two run guys is, number one, they're not losing streak stoppers. They're not DeGrom. They're not Scherzer. They're not put the hammer down. Those guys are becoming less and less prevalent because of the six inning starter at that point. The other problem I have with these type of starters is they're also prone to stinkers, like you saw with Severino. So they're more than likely not a guy that you could guarantee me that you go into Atlanta next week. The Sox won't be knocked off of them in 2 2/3 innings because they always make it up by a good outing against a bad team later on. And that's where this could get problematic because they won't give you length. So the bullpen will get overworked. They may not be consistent and you don't have that anchor. You thought Senga would be that and possibly Yamamoto. You don't have that anchor that could then make it all come together, but they're going to go to battle with that. And if you look at some of the Mets teams from the 90s, that 97 team, I hate to keep going back in history because it doesn't mean that this team will do the same thing. Team that started out 3-9, lost out to Miami. They were Florida back then, the wild card by 3 or 4 games. Bobby Jones led that rotation. He was a career. He was at best, he was a number three at best. And, you know, Al Leiter was I loved Al Leiter, but he's never really an ace. He was a number two, a very good number two. So the question is, can Manaea develop into something like an Al Leiter type with what he's evolved into and be there with Senga? Then all of a sudden you have something similar to what you saw in the 90s. You look at the 2006 Mets rotation. Pedro wasn't Pedro anymore. El Duque,
Glavin,
John Main, Oliver Perez. Glavin was probably not really an ace. Probably was like a number two at that point. You know, he's a 5-inning, 6-inning guy. Let's face it, you know? So I think that's where I'm curious to see, can they sustain staying in games with this offense if you have the brownouts with pitchers that have to really give you the 6 innings and 3 runs? Like, you really don't have, like, okay, this guy stinks and we could out hit the opposition today, but tomorrow we got Scherzer and Verlander back to back. So even if we don't win this game, we're guaranteed to beat. You don't have guarantees right now. You have every game, I think, is probabilistically you could win or lose. That's the definition of a 500 team. And I think that Stearns feels doing things on the margins, base running, defense, good bullpen is where you could swing more of those your way than not. And that's what bothers a lot of people, because every day they get on you know, their app or their TV, and they say, okay, Mets are not a guarantee to win. They could lose. Of course, everyone's going to think they're going to lose because it's easy to be defeatist. And that bothers you, especially when, you know, going into 2023, you were spending wild. They had Correa, and it looked like Cohen was going to, you know, build a super team.
Well, you even look back when they signed Scherzer to go with DeGrom. Then they did a Verlander Scherzer. I don't think they had them in the rotation together for probably more than a couple of weeks. And
they were awful
see.
In April. The starting pitching last year had an ERA over 5. I think they were only Oakland was worse than them. The one thing about the Mets has been frustrating. I think this is where the fans get this woe is me, and I could understand it. There's been extreme performances that have undone teams. Like, you've had years like 2018 where early on the offense was just as bad as this offense. And then you've had years like 2019 where the bullpen, Diaz included, just totally undid it. Like, historically, 1962 Mets, bad bullpen. Then you had the starting rotation that was pitching like, I use this narrative, 1962 Mets. Like, there's this extreme imbalance, and it's hard. Like, when you have that extreme poor performance on a roster, like what you're seeing with the offense, this homestand, 2 runs per game, it's hard to overcome that, because everybody else has to be perfect or all-star or elite, and they could do it maybe for a series or two, like you saw the pitching do it, but you can't do it for 162 games. It's not realistic. Gotta go. Look, you're gonna have to go to Cincinnati, maybe score 5 or 6 runs, because you're probably gonna give up 3 or 4 or 5 runs, and guys will come back down to earth, and that's okay. But, you know, and that's where, if they could swing these margins of error, 3, 4, 5 of them your way throughout the season, all of a sudden now you're in 85 wins and maybe you make the playoffs. Not where you want to be, but at the deadline, maybe they're close enough where there's someone available that gets them to the next
over
notch.
The top. Yep. I mean, I'm glad you brought up.
Too soon to talk about that. Way too soon. We're getting to know the Mets, as I always say. And people hate me saying that, but it's really true. We don't know. It's not like they've been together 5 years, you know? So
yeah. You know, I'm glad you brought up some of those 99-2000 guys. Adrian Hauser kind of reminds me of Rick Reed, top end of the rotation kind of guy that maybe can get you, you know, 10 to 12 wins with a, you know, late 3, early 4 ERA. And hopefully he can do something like that. You know, it sucks having to take a guy out through, you know, the analytics, like Hauser coming out at 67 pitches. And you got to wonder if that kind of, you know, puts that in their head, because they're not getting the opportunity or the chance, even though they've put a couple of men on, they're not given the opportunity to at least go that one more batter to see if maybe they can get out of it. Maybe it's that one or two pitch gets you into double play, gets that strikeout. They're not given these opportunities. It's just this like quick hook to get these guys out, because this is what it says on the computer.
Yeah. I've been a big thing. I like to push starting pitchers. And again, it's the first week, so it also could be about a buildup. They're saying, okay, let's build it up. I would push my starters to the 7th inning. I think it's realistically, to keep your bullpen healthy, asking them to give you more than 6 outs on a given night is dicey. This Mets team has, I think, an intriguing bullpen that can be good. Raley and Diekman have looked really good. You know what you have in Diaz. But the more that you have to dip into those guys in the 6th inning or the 7th inning, the less likely that they're going to be there for the 8th and 9th or the 10th when you have a runner on 2nd in a tie game. And that's why you have an Ottavino that's going to get the 8th inning, where I think Ottavino, who was very good in 2022, and I personally like, he hung a slider. It happens. When it rains, it pours. He's probably a guy you'd rather have in the 6th or 7th inning, which originally, when they brought him on, that's kind of what the vision was. He just pitched his way into a better option for the Mets that year. So that's where it's not just the pitcher's ability to give length, the team's desire to push them. And I think that's where your pitching problem is in baseball, where I don't think you have enough arms. I don't know how this league is going to expand to 32 teams. I think it can get really ugly, the kind of players that are going to be on big league rosters that don't belong. You already got guys who don't belong in the big leagues. Let's face it. I mean, if you have to go through 25 pitchers to 30 pitchers in a season, which has happened, you got guys who don't belong in the big leagues. I'm not saying they're bad players. They're 4A. They could pitch for Syracuse, but 25, 30, 35 years ago, they wouldn't sniff a big league uniform. So I agree with you. And that's the biggest thing. I think they have some real potential on the pitching side. I think length of starters is a real problem, where it can overwork the bullpen. And then now you have yourself, and you don't have a lot of you have one optionable reliever. That's Reed Garrett. That's it. He looked good today.
Yeah.
Garrett Reed, I should say, what I'm talking about. You know, now I'm getting all fumbled up. Now they got me all.
Oh, you're
fumbled
right.
Up
you're right. Reed Garrett.
Now I'm going to question myself. And he was on the team last year. This is what happens during the getting to know you phase. You have to get to know who are we covering here for the New York Mets.
There was, I have to start saving some of these tweets, but someone posted a stat of this Mets starting rotation last year and how they were able to get through, you know, five or six innings, and it wasn't many games. So, you know, Stearns is really rolling the dice here
right.
with these pitches and hoping, you know, something sticks. It's a lot of ifs in this rotation. I think going off of the fact that, you know, these guys are kind of playing for their lives here, because if they don't play well this year, they might not be in the league next season. You know, you're Absolutely. Talking about Luis Severino, you're talking about Sean Manaea, Adrian Hauser, I think is going to be fine. But like those guys, Tyler McGill, you know, you got Jose Buto right behind him, and he's pitched well.
Christian Scott, as we talk, Christian Scott, I think, has struck out 9 in 4 innings. I think he's given up 3 runs. I mean, he's looking like a guy that is on that DeGrom path. I know that's sacrilegious to say, because nobody's going to be like DeGrom was in 2021. Very few. I think that there are options, and I think you're right. Guys like Severino, I mean, I could easily see he's got an ERA of 6.5 in July. Either try him out in the bullpen or release him, and you bring up a Christian Scott or, you know, whatever. And then his career is on that, you know, life support at that point. I mean, he'll get a job. There's always going to be a job. Just mention there's too many teams, but it's not going to be the money that you want and things like that. Like, you know, he might become Matt Harvey and flame out at some point. So you're right. You know, Manaea is a guy that knows he's got to develop. And then there's guys trying to prove themselves, like Buto. I'm sure Lucchesi would love. I mean, he probably does it after all the years he spent in the big leagues. Does he want to be riding the buses down in AAA? Of course not. So it is interesting. I think that the floor is what it is. It's not a bad floor. I think the ceiling isn't quite as high. And I think the offense right now, with some of the concerns you have in different parts of the lineup, if it's worse than you think, because this is a lineup that I always play with that baseball musings calculator, and you take steamer projections or just average season, they should score 4.5, 4.7, 4.8. And if JD Martinez has the kind of season he had last year, they could score 5 runs a game.
Yeah.
But not with McNeil playing like a utility player, not McNeil being Joey Wendell, not with Starling Marte being Robinson Cano. I mean, you could survive with Bader in center, but that's predicated on those guys hitting more normal. I'm not saying McNeil has to win a batting title, but he can't be like he was last year with a 700 OPS.
Or he can't even have this start that he's having. He's off to a terrible start.
Yeah. And I think he, you know, preparation, there's a guy who couldn't prepare in spring because he has an elbow issue and that ligament, which they say no problem. I said to myself, maybe it is. I mean, the ligament in your elbow is going to hurt your swing. It's going to be pain. So it makes you wonder if there's something going on that he's trying to play through. Just because he says it's not a problem doesn't mean that he doesn't need reconstructive surgery on that and what have you.
Well, Marte's been okay. Pete's been good enough. You have the struggling of that Nimmo, Lindor, McNeil. Those three are struggling. Even I think at the plate, Brett Beatty has been okay. His defense has been way better, and he had a heck of a day during the doubleheader.
Yep.
But the guy that's really been taking off on offense is Francisco Alvarez. I mean, this guy, this kid, only in his second season, and I know it's really early, but he really does look like a leader. I think he's going to grow into that role. You see all the things that he tries to do to make himself better. You see him going to Steve Gelb's and trying to learn English and get that English language down for interviews.
Right.
He's up on the step every time. Someone posted a video today of him on the step during this doubleheader, trying to get these guys going, trying to get something going. And he's just... he has been that, you know, top prospect in MLB pipeline, what we've seen so far from him and the learning process. I know the average was not there, but I think we're starting to see this kid, you know, take a different, it's still early, but it's a feeling, I think.
Yep.
It's a feeling that I'm getting from Francisco Alvarez.
I agree. And you know, he's a guy that put so much time into the other side of the ball, the defensive side last year, that I think it might have taken a lot out of him. When Max Scherzer gives you credit, like Max Scherzer did when he was here, you listen, because he's not exactly someone who's going to throw praise to his receiver just because he wants to be a nice guy. He did fade in the second half. You have to think that maybe some of that was wearing down. Some of that could be obviously the league finding his holes. A former hitting coach told me many, many years ago that the difference between the David Wrights and the Lasting's Millage, that was the comparison he got, is that as they develop and grow and the league adjusts, they have the mental capacity to figure out how they're going to get ahead. It's a constant chess match. I'm ahead, you're ahead, we're even. You're ahead. And, you know, Lasting's Millage couldn't do that. He lacked the, at that time, that batting coach told me, he lacked the necessary mental capacity to be a productive big leaguer, where Reyes and Wright did. And similar to Alvarez, you know, there's a test now. He's got been around the league a couple of times. They know what he can do. There's so much video now. You know, he's worked on his defense, and it's a demanding position. So, is that work, and can he take it to the next level and approach his other side of his craft, the offensive side, and balance them out now? I never would have thought we're talking about a guy whose defense is ahead of his offense his first year in the league, because that's never how he was positioned when he was coming up through the system. And credit him, because he knew, you know, he could have easily just said, I don't care about catching. I'll just be a DH. Because he looked like one in the minor leagues. I remember saying, he's fat, you know, at that point. I don't really feel he's fat anymore. I mean, maybe it's this muscle. Like, I thought he looked like Alejandro Kirk for a while. I was like, is that what he looked like? I remember seeing videos. I'm like, that's Alvarez, you know? So
no, my wife looked at him this season and saw the change. Like, when she's noticing this,
body's in a much better body. It's not his pudgy body. It's a better body. And I give him credit for learning the language, where he could easily just fall back on the interpreter. There's nothing about his attitude that I can criticize. And I've criticized Brett Beatty a lot, and I'm sure Brett Beatty is a nice kid. What bothered me about Brett Beatty in comparison to Alvarez is, and he probably shouldn't have shared it, is when he said the game was speeding up on him, that he couldn't focus. I'm like, those are red flags, like big time red flags. Like, you're telling a newspaper writer, I'm having trouble focusing on every pitch, and I have to do that in the big leagues. Like, dude, that is number one on the list. And but players have had that issue. Look at Jose Reyes's first couple of years. They weren't great. And they actually brought Jose Valentin in at that time to help him kind of become a better, more focused defender, because he had the same issue, kind of like, you know, not being always locked in. And that's part of it. It's hard. And that's why when I hear them complain about Pete going to concert, I'm like, this is a hard job. Yes, they get paid, like I said, but to stay at that level, the work you have to do and the anxiety that comes with it, I'm not asking you to feel sorry for them. It's so much harder than what we make it out to be sometimes on shows like this. You know, which are fun, but you know, I think you just have a responsibility when you do something like this, whether it's on a major network or here, to be intellectually honest. And that's, you know, what I guess I'm trying to be. People probably think I'm being a Pollyannish, but I'm trying to give you both sides of the stick here and how this thing works.
No, absolutely. And I think that it's just so nice to see that, you know, he's kind of really doing this on his own. There's no veteran backstop catcher to kind of help him through this. Maybe Omar Narváez, because they've come from the same country, but Narváez is not really that great.
I haven't heard great things about him personally. Not that I'm going to repeat what I've heard. I haven't heard great things about makeup from people that I would trust. I don't say it because it could be an opinion.
Yeah.
But I think people have questioned that signing from the start. I mean,
absolutely. And I think that I really wish that there was this veteran backstop that could kind of, you know, help Alvarez just a little bit more. I think it would benefit him if he had that. You know, obviously in the past, you know, Piazza was just a superstar. He didn't need, like, he had Vance Wilson, he had Jason Phillips, he had Todd Pratt. And then you look at the double combo of Paul Laduca and Ramon Castro and, you know, Darnot and Plawecki.
Yep.
This kid's on his own, really. Because Nito's not giving you much, and neither is Omar Narváez. So he's kind of got to learn on his own. He's done that. He's taking it to the next level all on his own. And it's just quite impressive. And that's why I think that, you know, he might be that main core piece in the next, you know, 3 or 4 years. He might be that leader, whereas, you know, Lindor's the leader on the field, and maybe he takes a step back, and this becomes a Francisco Alvarez team, you know, knock on wood, stays healthy, continues to play well. We all know it's just the second season and only the beginning of that. So that's just the hopes.
Yeah. I mean, that's the hope. I mean, he's the only bright spot really on offense right now. I mean, Beatty's been okay. I think Beatty, I've been more impressed with him on defense. And, you know, if Alvarez could become that 30 home run producer in the middle with him, JD Martinez, Pete Alonso, you got to think Nimmo and Lindor at the top of the lineup will come around. They have enough offense. Now, the component parts, the McNeil, why I'm talking about him being a component player because he's played like that for so long, the last year or change. Marte, you know, who can he be more, not Marte from 2 years ago, his career year, but more normalish. That remains to be seen because Harrison Bader is who he is. At best, you're going to get league average offense. You're going to get great defense. He's not going to hit right-handers. He's going to hit lefties. Maybe Tyrone Taylor gets a little bit involved here after a big hit today. We'll see. You're going to need some of those other three guys to not be in the doldrums because that's the killer. Because when the Mets have Alonso and Lindor hitting, they're good. Go back to 2022 in July. Look at Alonso and Lindor's numbers and look at the Mets' record going into August. Really good. The brownouts happen when those guys cool down and the Vogelbacks and the Naquins and guys like that didn't step up and produce anywhere near acceptable. And that's the concern I have with this team is, as you can see, not that any team could have, other than Alvarez, every player is well below average, like horribly, historically low. No team could win like that. The fact that they're in games, I'm not trying to have it's a positive. Like they shouldn't even sniffed any wins on this homestand. And really, you could argue with a couple of things going their way, they probably could easily be 4-2. I know that sounds crazy. Yeah. They could be 4-2, but that's where this team is at. It's a marginal team with things like I was talking about, the base running, the execution defensively, working the counts. I mean, Mendoza's talked about approach. We talked about preparation earlier. He hasn't liked their approach at the plate, the chasing and now passive. So, you know, there's a lot there to improve upon. And I think it's more realistic that gets better than if we were talking today and all these pitchers had 6 ERAs. I'd be like, oh, Anthony, this is going to be a long year. Like I have more faith the offense will come around than if the fact that the pitching has shown something, even if it's in this Citi Field wind tunnel, that's positive because that's a lot harder to fix than waiting for Lindor and Nimmo and Lonzo to be themselves. That's all. I'm not asking them to be elite, best of their careers. I'm not asking for career best. I'm asking just be yourself. And that should make a big difference.
Yeah, if the Mets can get to the point where Milwaukee is, because Milwaukee was playing great. What David Stearns is expecting from this Mets roster is what we saw from that Milwaukee roster.
Yep.
The defense, situational hitting, getting the big hit, getting the big pitches. That's what we want to see from the Mets by the time this season is over. And then you got the tiers with the offense, right? It's like Alonso, yeah. Nimmo maybe up there with Lindor, sure. And obviously JD Martinez. If they're not, you need Marte and you need McNeil to do their things. If they're not, you need Alvarez and Beatty. And then it trickles down. So hopefully at some point this season, I don't know when it's going to start. I know they go to Cincinnati. That's a tough young team that's up and coming. And then you got Atlanta, which we all know has always been tough with the Mets. Hopefully they can find some footing. I know they didn't play as well in the second game of the doubleheader. They did get the win, but you know, you got to guess to take these little victories as you can.
Don't throw the wins back in the ocean. Never throw a win, but understand that I'm not convinced. Like they didn't play well in the 6 games.
Cautious optimism. That's how I go throughout an entire season with cautious optimism for the Mets. Before I let you go, before we end this show, I wanted to get your thoughts. The Mets signed Julio Teheran. I know that Andy Martino has been talking about this. I feel like it's been for years that the Mets have been linked to Julio Teheran, and they brought him in 2.5 mil plus 450K in incentives. That was according to Francis Romero, who's an MLB reporter. What are your thoughts on them bringing in Teheran? Are you okay with this move, or did you prefer them going with the in-house?
I mean, I'm okay with it. I don't think he's going to, I mean, he pitched well for a little bit last year and then he pitched horribly. And maybe he's a guy that eventually becomes like that sixth swing guy. Like you got to think bigger here. They don't want to have the ability to, you know, so you don't want to option guys up and down. It's not good for them. It's not good for them. Up, down, up, down. You got to think of the toll it has on their uncertainty of their routine and whatnot. Maybe he becomes that swing guy. I think Michael Tonkin, and I don't want to say he's ready to. Michael Tonkin was put in a couple of tough spots with a runner on second in extra innings. He pitched a lot differently. You pitch a lot differently in those spots. Put him in a clean inning to eat innings, a little bit different. So I'm not ready to throw him back in the ocean here, but Teheran is a guy that could probably give you 5 innings, 2 runs, 3 runs. He's not anything special, but he's a veteran. And, you know, he's somebody that had some modicum of success last year. Ultimately, if Christian Scott or Mike Vasil or Dom Hamill or even, you know, Buto do what you think they can do, there's not going to be room for Teheran. I also think it's an indictment. And I still think that Tyler McGill is a guy. I just don't see it. I really don't. I don't see it. I don't think he's going to stay healthy. I don't think he's ever going to be consistent. I'm not even sure he could be a reliever. I mean, I know his brother turned himself into a reliever.
Mike, he's on borrowed time. He's on borrowed time.
Yeah, he's close to 4A. Yep.
Jose Buto is, he had it towards the end. It's like he found it, right? Like mid-season last year, he found it, pitched very well at the end.
He's got four pitches. Yeah.
They stunk last year at the end of the season, and he was pitching very well, quality innings.
Right.
He cuts during spring. He kills it during spring. And even with this start, where I think Tyler McGill would have folded in that first inning and given up two or three runs, he gives up the one run, comes back, and just, you know, pitches very well. He's on borrowed time.
Their starters, Buto was part of that in September last year, were like top five in baseball. So the starting pitching was good at the end of the year last year, and that included McGill as well. The blueprint, and this is what I would leave everybody with, the blueprint for this team is very simple. You get 5 to 6 innings out of your starters and try to limit the to 2 to 3 runs. You hand it over to a bullpen that I think can miss some bats. The walks are always going to be there and can give you good bridge work in the 7th and 8th inning to Diaz, who is elite and arguably the best closer in the game. So when you get a lead and Diaz is in, you're probably going to win that game. He might blow a game or two. You're probably going to win that game. Easy, complicated to get to that, because within that, you have to have your offense put up a crooked number. You have to have them make all the plays in a field. You have to have them have good approach to the plate to work the other pitcher out of the game and get to there, or especially those teams that don't have the bullpen. I don't love everybody in the bullpen. Jorge Lopez makes me nervous, and Michael Tonkin makes me nervous, and Drew Smith makes me nervous, and I'm sure Diekman and Rayleigh at some point will make me nervous, but they're pretty good. And if the Mets, it starts with the starting pitching. If the Mets starters consistently give them 6 innings, 2 to 3 runs, they're going to be in games, and I don't think they're going to be a 95 plus loss team, because if they had gotten that last year, and they didn't for a large part of the season, even with Scherzer and Verlander, they would have been closer to the wild card than you think, and they may not have ripped the thing apart in July, but that's another story for another day.
Well, they played 500 towards the end of the season. That's what the Jonathan Aruizes of the world, the Rafael Ortegas.
They not even trying to win. Not even trying to win. I mean, they, you know, that this is not, it's not hopeless. You have core offensive players. You do have some decent pitching, and you have an elite closer. It's about, and that's why they look, remind me so much of some of those, you know, not maybe not 99, but even 99, 97, 98, 99 Mets, 2000, 2001, which were not perfect rosters. 2006 was not a perfect roster. 2015 was not a perfect roster. That's the Mets fans' frustration. Why can't we have a perfect roster like the 98 Yankees? Well, I think they're trying to get there. You keep hearing good things about the arms. You saw good things in the spring breakout. I'm not saying all these guys are going to be a factor this year. I'm not saying they're all going to make the big leagues. At some point, you have to realize, and Zach Scott has talked about it, I highly recommend going to his podcast, the way that the ownership approval came post-COVID to the expectations of Cohen wiping away the cheapness of the Wilpons, or I shouldn't say the cheapness, the cash flow issues of the Wilpons. They had cash flow issues. If they had the money, they would have spent it. They didn't have it. And then the constant trying to build the organization while trying to win now, it's nearly impossible. And I guess what, guys? They won 101 games, and they came pretty damn close to doing both of it. Like, think about that. Without, you know, with multiple player development heads and different front offices, like the fact that they even had that 2022 with all this chaos, that's pretty remarkable. That's why I think they finally said, look, we can't do it this way. We're going to be going like this. Mm-hmm. And this season's the first season. Give Stearns credit. He's got cojones. He's not going to let 1-5 or WFAN or Mike Silva or Anthony Rivera. He's not going to care what we say. He's going to stick to the plan. And we're going to have to sit back and whine and complain and pontificate. But in the end, he's going to say, it's my team, and sit back, because I think I'm going to get us where we need to get. I guess we'll see.
Well, Mike, this was amazing to have you on.
Yeah,
it's always fun talking with you. I appreciate you every time you come on this podcast, and every time you have me on. As I mentioned,
we got to do a movie night. Let's do a movie night. If they were off today, I thought we could have did the movie night about the 0-5 start in 2005 and played a Smoltz game where Beltran hits the home run and Pedro strikes out 15 or Smoltz strikes out, whatever. But that, you know, there's no time for that.
We'll get to one. Whether it's at the All-Star break, because I'm pretty sure we'll have to do something during the break. But,
sure.
Absolutely. Cool. I love doing those with you. I love whenever you bring me on. It's always a blast. And you're always welcome on my podcast as well. Do me a favor. I did it at the beginning of the show. Let everyone know where they can follow you again and what get you got working because you got that newsletter out.
Yeah. So at Talking Mets No G on X / Twitter, Instagram. And if you go to substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG, I have a newsletter that a couple of times a week I do commentary in between. It's called Mike Silva Talking Mets Behind the Mic, where you can get some commentary in between video, audio, things that don't happen on Sunday. $5 a month. You get a nice discount if you sign up for the year. I understand in this economy that it's difficult to ask anybody to pay, but I think the money that I use to help support the content and the show, and that's all it is. I'm not going to Turks and Caicos on you. Trust me on that. It will help enhance, because I think guys like you, and I mean that, and I hope, and I hope I fall into that. We have an opening now because it's just the beat writers and that's it. And not all those guys' job is not what we do. We have a way of filling that gap in the freelance world that is not being filled locally anymore by traditional media. And I'm not criticizing them because I'm not here to talk about that, but they have a different philosophy because of their business model. Our business model is providing the best possible content about the Mets to the fans. And in that, because we don't have the pressure of what those guys have, I think we could do a lot. So try it out. Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG, TalkingMetsNoG on X. And I'd love to hear from you. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. No G, of course, in the email. And I'm sure you, Anthony, you and I will be talking soon again, I'm sure.
Yeah, we definitely have to come back once this getting to know you phase is kind of...
Yep.
Through and Absolutely. See where the Mets are at by that time. It's either going to go really, really bad or
they're going to come after me. There's people got their knives out for me. I've already gotten the emails. Oh, you know, you're sandbagging the show because of the newsletter and you're overly, they've asked me if I'm, you know, in Stearns's pocket. I'm like, guys, if the Mets are doing something wrong, I'm going to say it. Trust me on that. But that's a whole nother show. That conversation.
Honest and fair. That's the only way we can be in this type of market. Absolutely. But Mike, I appreciate you. We'll have you on again. Mike Silva from the Talking Mets podcast. That wraps it up for Subway to Shea. You can follow on X, Instagram, and TikTok at Subway to Shea. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. You can watch some of the clips from here and some of my live streams. I'll do some series previews and a lot more on YouTube. If you enjoyed this episode and just enjoy Subway to Shea in general, just leave a review, give me some stars, hopefully there are 5 of them, and hit that like button. With that said, I can't thank you enough for tuning in and helping this podcast grow. It's a pleasure sharing this content. I know Mike always has a pleasure sharing the content with you as well. You can continue to be a part of this success of the Subway to Shea brand, and I appreciate all of you for that. For Anthony Rivera, this is the Subway to Shea podcast. Always remember, let's go Mets.